In about 15 or 20 minutes, we'll talk to ESPN college football analyst Heather Denich. We'll get into the latest polls and positioning of these teams as we sit here today. A big one Saturday night as Penn State will host Michigan. We'll get into all that with Heather Denich coming up in about 15, 20 minutes. But first, we need to throw out a hearty congrats to a friend of the show, your partner in the booth for every Predators game. We're here at the arena right now, Predators and Avalanche tonight, 7 o'clock. Puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6 following Jared and the GM right here on 102.5 The Game. But our man Chris Mason will join us tomorrow on the show, and we can do it officially. But before we do it tomorrow, we need to throw out a congratulations to the Mason family. They were a little busy yesterday.
They were. And a big welcome to the world, young Fraser MacArthur Mason, born at 3:54 a.m.
So he has a baby boy.
Got a baby boy.
He has two daughters.
Got two daughters.
So Mace now gets his boy. All right.
And Courtney, his wife, doing great. We heard from Mace this morning. He will be up in the booth tonight. So he's getting his rest. It was certainly a long night, and it was a great night. So we're really excited
Very
for the
cool.
Mason family.
Was it tough for him to be in Chicago on Saturday?
Well, I was asking him. I was like, you know, you're on high alert here. You know,
right.
he goes, we'll be okay. We're going to be okay. Like they had planned for this to happen at around this time, but you never know. So we were in Chicago. He did have to keep the phone near him at all times.
Induced? Is that there? It's been a while since I've had to learn the lingo, right?
Yeah, I think they were scheduled to go in around that time, but you know, these things happen when they happen.
Well,
right?
You're right. Sometimes it's out of your control.
Yeah.
But if they give you the option, like, hey, if you want to go on and do this now, then go on and take it. That's what we did.
We did that with our
sign us up. We'll see you tomorrow.
We signed up.
We'll see you tomorrow. Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was great. Great for them. So you got a young goalie, perhaps.
We will find out.
You never know.
You never know. Speaking of, Freddie Gaudreau back with the team. Of course, we got to learn everything we could possibly know about Frederick Gaudreau last year in the playoff run, in particular in the Stanley Cup final. What a final for him. What a nice, nice young man he is. And a really good hockey player. A guy that's been fighting odds his whole career. He's been told, hey, you know what? We really like you, but, you know, this is kind of as far as you're going to go. This is kind of it for you. I mean, that's pretty much what he's been told at every level, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, we really like you. You're great for the room. We root for you. But this is probably as far as you're going to go. Well, good for him for not listening to anybody along the way, because he just kept fighting and scratching and clawing. And here he is in the NHL. But Freddie Gaudreau back. Looks like Roman Josi. It's good to see him back out on the ice. Not sure what the status of Nick Bonino. They put Yannick Weber on IR today.
I think that's encouraging for Bonino. I think it's safe to say he's not playing tonight. I think I heard Kevin McCarthy, when he was with us, say that he's likely to be out. And that's why they brought Gaudreau in there, mm-hmm. because he can play center, and he can play anywhere in your lineup. So even when Bonino comes back, Gaudreau could be a useful player for them to use. But I think it's encouraging that they put Weber on the IR and not Bonino. So maybe there's hope that he's back fairly soon. There was no update at all on Bonino, so I am speculating on that. But I'm looking for positives, hoping for positives on that, because he's a valuable player.
Well, unfortunately, they've been losing a guy during the course of the game, and most of these cases early in the game, not to return. So that's been some unfortunate luck.
It happened to Yarbrough in the preseason. It happened to Sissons in the regular season. And now it happened to Bonino. So
Weber
that,
and Bonino.
That makes it tough. That makes it tough when you are down to three centers. But I thought under the circumstances, they did a pretty good job in Chicago managing that. And so now more responsibility tonight for Sissons, for Gaudreau, and obviously for Yarbrough and Johansson, who will be playing in their normal roles.
So Western Conference in division foe tonight, which we've seen the last couple of games, but back into the Eastern Conference Thursday and Saturday. Don't forget Saturday, early drop of the puck, 11:30 a.m. Central Time. We'll have 10:30 a.m. pregame, which is different. I was trying to remember, when's the last time they played this early? Like 2 o'clock, we've been seeing the 2 o'clock and I think even a 1 o'clock matinee, I think, but I don't remember anything this early.
It's an Eastern Time game, so it's 12:30 Eastern Time when it starts. So that's about as early as you're going to see. I think some games out west in a deal where, say, the Staples Center is being used as a doubleheader, basically. I think there have been some early games out there. I don't know if it's been noon, though. It's been more like 1 local time.
I don't even remember 1. I feel like 2 is the earliest I can remember. Maybe there's been a 1, but I just don't remember anything this early. Right. When did they play?
They played a San Jose game.
The Penguins on Super Bowl Sunday. That was an early game. I don't remember how early, though. But yeah, that still was like 1 or 2 o'clock, right?
Yeah. You're going to have a handful of games that start early. And I think you talk to the players, anything that gets them out of a morning skate, they're okay with that.
That's right.
Honestly. I mean, I think there are a lot of teams that are evolving away from the morning skate, at least the mandatory morning skate. Some guys like it, but I think most times a lot of coaches now are saying, if you want to go out and skate, skate. If you don't, if you want to take the rest, take the rest. And you do meetings, you do some other things to get yourself going, but don't burn the energy if you don't want to. I think there are a lot of people, too, the sports scientists and things like that are saying, total waste of time to expend energy before you're going to put it all on the line in a real game at night, that there's nothing beneficial. These are people that are not coaches or things like that. They are just strictly from the sports science part of it, that it's not necessary.
Well, along those lines, do you think it's because I got to experience batting practice for the first time, like being down on the field up in Toronto this summer? Caleb Joseph was nice enough to get myself and my wife down on the field for the Blue Jays and the Orioles batting practice. And so watching that up close and personal, how early that is before a game, all the energy that is expended out there with taking all these reps, hitting out in the field, throwing, all that you do before a baseball game. With that being said, in such a long season and a grind that it is, it's double of a hockey season. Aren't there people saying the same thing about that? Like, why do you need to do all of that before a game? Or is it because baseball is a much slower sport, you know, than hockey? Because in no other sport do you spend that much, like football, you don't go out, you go out there and you warm up, but it's nothing like what we're talking about. You don't actually like practice.
Basketball,
you have shoot-arounds.
Yeah, and I think the shoot-arounds in basketball are the same as hockey skate-arounds. I don't think that they're necessary. I think if you want to groove your shot and things like that, you can do that before the game starts that night if you're playing a night game. Baseball, I do think there's value in batting practice and taking the ground balls, because that's when you get your work in. Plus, remember, baseball, you have a game every day.
Like, there's no practice.
There's really no practices. Yeah. You know, it's not like you can go in and do batting practice for 2 days and then you have a game. You have to get your work in there.
You're right. It is definitely different.
And, as you said, you don't expend as much energy. Unless you're the pitcher, you're not expending as much energy during the game. So you can do that.
Because in the NBA and NHL season, I mean, you can have portions in your schedule where you have, you know, 2 or 3 days off.
Right.
And obviously, baseball, that is never the case.
You're
going to get 1 day off eventually from times and patches of the season. But you're right, there's no 3 days off in baseball.
Yeah, and you're doing this work before the game. You're not coming in the morning, then going home, and then coming back out to the park for the game. So you're doing it once you get to the park. And some teams, and I noticed, I learned this from Dansby Swanson for the Braves, that he said on Sundays they don't take batting practice. When they have the afternoon game, they don't do the batting practice. And you're coming off of a night game before. So sometimes coaches are now saying, well, if you have a night game and it's going until 10 or 11 o'clock, there's no sense in getting up in the morning and doing the same routine for a 1 o'clock game. So they do think about rest and things like that when the game is earlier.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Heather Denich. Talk about the positioning as we sit here in the third weekend of October. Positioning everybody. Who does she like and where they're at right now in the playoff landscape? Is TCU in good position? Is Penn State in good position? Is there somebody on the outside looking in, like maybe a Wisconsin, that she thinks is still in good position? I don't know. We'll get into all of that with Heather Denich when we come back from ESPN College Football Analyst. But first, Willie, you've got a word about the folks at Lee Company.
Lee Company. Just gave them a call today, as a matter of fact. And Lee Company serves a lot of different things at our household. 567-1000 is the number. And the reason is we are members of the home maintenance plan. And that means that every year we get annual checkups on our plumbing system, our electrical system, our heating and cooling systems as well. So they're calling us, they're scheduling an appointment to come out and make sure everything's running properly. And if there are times where you need a little maintenance, you get discounts when you're a part of the home maintenance plan. So that's when I called this morning, that was the first thing they said. Hey, you're a member of our home maintenance plan. Thank you for your business. They do a really good job, excellent customer service. And so we recommend the same thing for you out there. If you're maybe new to town, you're looking for somebody to handle some of these needs for you, think about Lee Company. 567-1000 is the number, or go online at leecompany.com. They're a huge sponsor of the Nashville Predators. And remember, Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Back here on 3D, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Derek Mason, D-Mace will be back in the saddle with us tomorrow. We'll have SEC basketball media days in our town for the next couple of days at our beautiful downtown Omni Hotel. It'll be on men's side tomorrow, women on Thursday. We're looking forward to covering that along with everything else that is going on in the sports world. We always love catching up with our next guest. Heather Denich, ESPN College Football Playoff Analyst, is on the line with us. Heather, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, well, our blood pressure is much better than some of the coaches last weekend, starting on Friday night. It was upset city in college football over the weekend, and it all started on Friday night with two gigantic upsets, and it just carried right into the weekend. In your mind, what was the biggest upset?
Well, I think the whole Pac-12. That was the biggest storyline in my mind. Washington and Washington State both going down put a severe dagger in the Pac-12's college football playoff hopes. You know, and looking at that league now, it's the only Power 5 conference without an undefeated team in it right now. And I think if you look at the North, Washington State on the outside looking in, USC is heading into an elimination game against one-loss Notre Dame. So that, to me, was the biggest takeaway from the first weekend, from last weekend, rather.
They're in big danger of getting completely shut out, aren't they?
They are. But the thing is at this point, you can't eliminate any one-loss team that still has a shot at winning its conference, because the norm is having losses. That's normal. Going undefeated is not normal. The question is, once you get that loss and you win your conference, how does your, quote, whole body of work stack up against those four other Power 5 conference champions? And that's why Washington State are in such a dire position right now, because of those non-conference schedules. Between the two of those teams, between the two of them, they've combined for one win against a Power 5 non-conference opponent, and that's Rutgers.
I'm good. We all get hiccups, Heather, and we all have our method of getting past hiccups, right? Drinking water, holding our breath. I mean, there's all kinds of methods.
I'm a holding the breath guy.
Holding your
that's
breath?
What I do. Yeah.
Some people say, you know, scare them, you know, boo! Scare, a quick sudden scare will get rid of your hiccups. Who had a hiccup here in the last couple of weeks, especially this past weekend, but can recover from their hiccup and still be there in the end? What would be your answer to that?
I think Clemson has the most realistic shot at it. They've got a blueprint. They've done it before. They lost last year to Pitt. They went on to win the whole darn thing. And the reality of the situation is that they need Syracuse to lose again in order to get back in the Atlantic Division race, and that's probably going to happen. So I think they have the most realistic shot in terms of one-loss teams because they have a win against Auburn. Now, folks say, well, Auburn lost, so doesn't that take away a little bit from their win? Sure, it does. But Clemson's win against Auburn and Alabama's win against Florida State is still so much better than anything Penn State, Ohio State, Washington State has done in their non-conference schedule.
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple one-loss teams that really, when you get to getting down to the discussion, they're not really mentioned. But they only have one loss, and I want you to tell me which one you believe should be more in the discussion. Is it NC State with their one loss? Boy, would they like to have that South Carolina game back. Is it Virginia Tech? Is it Notre Dame? Is it, let's throw USC in there. Which one do you like? Who should we talk about more of the one loss teams, the ones I just mentioned?
I think USC. Because they're heading into an elimination game against Notre Dame. But you mentioned NC State, and they've got back-to-back huge opportunities. They have to win at Notre Dame, and then they play Clemson. So all of those teams that you mentioned still have so many opportunities to impress the selection committee. We're right now 2 weeks to the day from the first ranking coming out on October 31st. So Clemson, NC State, Notre Dame has the seventh toughest remaining schedule, according to ESPN's FPI. Mm. It's a double-edged sword because they can either play their way right into that top four or they might lose on Saturday and be knocked right out of it.
Okay. Give me one or two teams that you think that are still in the discussion as we sit here today, but in the end, because of some of this stuff, like you said, the remaining schedule and how it's going to play out in your mind, they will no longer be in the discussion. Who maybe are a couple teams that come to mind, in your opinion?
I think Oklahoma is still getting a lot of love, and it should after its win against Texas in spite of that win loss to Iowa State. But I believe that Oklahoma State is a better team than Oklahoma, and not getting credit for it.
Okay.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see Oklahoma State get another shot at TCU in the Big 12 championship game, and all of a sudden we're talking about the Cowboys again and Mike Gundy's team. That might be the one off the top of my head. And look, Penn State, we don't know diddly about the Big Ten right now. We'll find out a lot more over the next 2 weeks. Penn State plays Michigan this weekend and then hits the road, goes to Ohio State. And if Penn State wins those two games, I think that they're in the top four. They deserve to be in the top four. If they lose one of those games, and ESPN's FPI projects that the only game they lose on the rest of their schedule is to Ohio State, it's very possible Penn State has a better season this year than it did last year and still doesn't get in the top four because it won't win the East.
Oof.
Heather Dinich is with us from ESPN. We're looking at the projections, though it is early, but there's a lot of interesting storylines. And let me ask you another one out of the Big Ten, Heather, and that's Wisconsin. We were looking at it that the weak side of the division, the Big Ten, their schedule, non-conference, is not impressive, and really they don't have to play all the big dogs in the league in the regular season. So what about their pathway, and are they a team that probably has to go undefeated to get into the discussion?
Yes, I believe they have to go undefeated, and the committee hasn't yet been faced with a true test like Wisconsin. It could have happened but didn't with Baylor in the first season in 2014. If they would have been undefeated, I think we'd be having the same conversation. Iowa, 2015, same thing. When you look at Wisconsin, if they run the table and win the Big Ten, I think it would be hard for the committee to keep them out. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if they did, if there are other conference champions out there with stronger resumes. Because if you look at Wisconsin, what they've done right now, they have not beaten anyone with a record above 500. Not one non-conference win against a Power 5 team. And their opponents, as we sit here today, are a combined 16-23. So it's not good.
It's not good.
No.
So, Heather, another thing I want to ask you about, because you follow this closer than we do, but every year the committee itself goes through a couple little changes. People rotate on, rotate off. Have you noticed anything different, or is this something that maybe we'll find out in the coming weeks? When you have different eyeballs in there, different opinions, do you notice something different in the way they're going to evaluate teams?
Well, that's yet to be seen. Yes, you do, because it's all individual and it's all subjective. And so on the committee this year, the three new faces will be Ohio State's athletic director, Gene Smith, the president of Robert Morris University, Chris Howard. He played football at Air Force. He's so smart. It's unbelievable. I sat down with him at his office in Pittsburgh this spring, and I'm like, I can't hang with you, man. I'm just a sports writer. He's a Rhodes Scholar. And then also Frank Beamer. Everybody knows Frank Beamer, the former Virginia Tech coach. So when you look at those people, they'll all bring different aspects to it. Gene Smith at Ohio State will be able to say, look, I know how hard it is to go on the road and win at Iowa when talking about Penn State. And Frank Beamer, you know, he loves special teams and defense. So I'm sure he will bring some of that to the discussion. It's all so subjective. So, yes, the different personalities, I'm sure, will bring a different vibe. And you never know if those three guys were on it a year ago, maybe Penn State would have gotten in. I don't know. It's impossible to answer. But, yes, it's a different mix.
It's way too early to ask this question. But, of course, we're sports talk show people, so we will ask it. I remember everybody was all excited.
It's never too early, Willie.
Ole Miss, Mississippi State were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Remember, they were 1-2, and everybody was all excited. And then by the time it really was crunch time, they were both way off the radar because there's a lot of football left. But I think it's intriguing because it does look like today that Alabama and Georgia are a step ahead of everybody else. Georgia's got the win at Notre Dame, and Alabama's Alabama. If they were to face each other in the SEC championship game, that would be an intriguing one. If it's a good game, that would be a really great scenario for the SEC to have two teams that would certainly have credentials of being in the Final Four.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And it wouldn't surprise me if those two teams finished in the committee's top four. If it's an instant classic and Georgia takes Alabama down to the wire and there's just it's really hard for them to leave them out. But the thing is it depends, again, on what happens in the other Power 5 conferences. Is Georgia then going up against a Pac-12 champ in Washington or Washington State? Then it probably does make sense to put them in, right? Because they beat Notre Dame, and what did the Pac-12 champ do? Ohio State, they lost their only non-conference game that mattered. So when you start comparing resumes like that, that's what you have to look at. But I do think that think that Alabama and Georgia could both get in there.
So do they have to be, Heather, let's see, the scenarios would be both undefeated and one of them loses, or the one with the one loss in the SEC championship game beats the other one that was undefeated? In other words, does the scenario have to be that neither one can have two losses, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think both of them need to be undefeated going into that game to have a realistic shot at it. I mean, and look, we can't not talk about Auburn still, even though they have two losses, because what if Auburn runs the table and beats Georgia and Alabama?
Oh, boy.
And rude to it, you know? And I think the key is, guys, is that when you look at what happened last year and Ohio State got in and Penn State didn't, the committee said, you know what? Even if you won head-to-head and even if you didn't even win your division, we still think you're a better team. Well, that can apply to Georgia.
Yeah.
Or it can apply to a one-loss Alabama that only lost to Auburn.
Yeah, good point. All right, last thing. Penn State head coach James Franklin, who we got to know very well when he was here at Vanderbilt, said he agrees with Urban Meyer that they should not play more than two night road games. He says it's just brutal for their players and for their coaches. Well, this just in for James Franklin. They get those big contracts because of TV money. Heather, like network that you work for. And, you know, guess what? It's all about prime time these days. It's all about playing at night. I got bad news for him if he thinks these games are getting moved to during the day.
So So I didn't see that he said that, but what went right through my head when he said that was toughen up, Buttercup. It's good for everybody.
Exactly. I mean, come on. He knows better than
but
that.
But is anybody surprised that he said that? He's always got something
like
that.
Like I said, we cover James Franklin, so we know. But come on, you know. This is what you're not going to put these primetime games. This is where it's going today. It's all about putting it, you know, at night. That's where the big games are now, other than the 2:30 game our time in the middle of the afternoon on CBS. Other than that, everything's at night, and it's all primetime stuff.
It's great exposure for them, and it's good for recruiting, and it's a win-win for everybody.
No doubt. Heather, always good to catch up with you. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Heather Denich from ESPN. She is their college football playoff analyst, and it is getting interesting because now we can start really having these discussions of how is this going to play out.
Still a lot
for some of these teams.
Left.
All right, let's get into real quick before we get out of this segment the scenario of Alabama and Georgia both getting in, two teams from the same conference, which you know a lot of people cringe at. But if they're worthy, then why shouldn't they be in there? So what in your mind does the scenario have to be? Can a two-loss team get in anymore in the college playoff?
I think it would be tough for a two-loss team to get in as the second-place team in their league. I think if it's a two-loss team and it's a brutal schedule, then there's a shot. And Heather mentioned something that's, I think, going to be the key. Is Auburn. They play each of them play Auburn in the regular season. And so how good is Auburn? Can Auburn bounce back?
If they were to beat both of them, how much would they kick themselves over this LSU game this past weekend? If they were to find a way, and I don't believe they can, I don't believe that maybe they do, beat Georgia and Alabama. I mean, one, sure. Both, highly unlikely in my opinion, but if they did, man, would they kick themselves over this past weekend where they just gagged that win away in Baton Rouge.
And this is another one. The consensus is that Auburn is the next best team, right? It's Georgia, Alabama,
yeah,
above
everybody
else.
Thinks
and then the next
third.
Best team is Auburn. But if Auburn loses both to Georgia and Alabama, they're a four-loss team, even though they've lost to four good teams. This is all in theory. So how good would that win look? But I do think that's the best scenario of both Georgia and Alabama getting in, is both of them run the table, they have impressive wins, and then one beats the other in the championship game, and you're sitting there going, how can we keep the other team out? Especially if they look even in that championship game, which is, you know, you never know.
But she's right about one thing. We're going to find out more about the Big Ten in the coming weeks. Because
the Big Ten is going to sort itself out.
All these big games
are what's going to happen, though, but what is likely to happen is that Wisconsin might get there in that championship game with no more than one loss, and you're thinking,
and they've played nobody.
It's a weak schedule.
Played nobody. We'll come back. You'll hear our discussion with Sean McDonough. It's really good. If you didn't hear it yesterday, some really good insights to his profession, what he's done, kind of his journey to this point, being in the booth. I mean, he's called so many big games. You'll hear that next on 3D. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sean McDonough, our next guest, knows all about that. He knows you're just not going to walk into the Carrier Dome on a Friday night and push Syracuse around.
That's right. That was a fun watch, for sure.
Where were you watching? Were you at home?
I was at home in Boston, kicking myself that I didn't go.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
Go up. You know, we have to be on site on Saturday, wherever our Monday night football game is, because we go watch the home team practice on Saturday. So the Friday night game was really the only Syracuse game I would have a chance to go to, and the athletic director had invited me up, and I was going to go. You know what? It's a busy time of year, and a lot of stuff going on, and they're going to lose. So, you know, why go up there? And I was kicking myself for not going when I watched it on TV Friday night from our home in Boston.
23-point underdog. Outright winner. Wow.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Cool.
They deserved it. Wasn't a fluke.
No, not at all.
Dabo Swinney said Syracuse really did outplay him, and if you watch the game, you know, that really was true. They deserved to win.
No question about it. I saw the piece on you and your brothers on Real Sports on HBO. Pretty cool. Obviously, we all remember your father, but to see where you guys are today in the sports world, pretty neat. What did you think?
Well, I thought they did a great job. I was really flattered when they asked. You know, I've been an avid watcher of HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel for a long time, and always thought there was a reason why they won a lot of Emmys for sports journalism, because they do a great job. So, you know, when John Frankel approached me with the idea of doing it, we were flattered and honored more than anything else. And then I thought they did a great job on the piece. You know, my youngest brother is the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, and my other brother, Terry, is the vice president of player personnel for the Arizona Cardinals. And the thing that John found interesting when he first talked to me about doing the story was that each of us has a world championship ring. I have one from the Boston Red Sox when I was one of their announcers in 2004. And Terry has one from when he was scouting for the Baltimore Ravens. And Ryan has one from when he was the assistant GM of the Boston Celtics. So, you know, three brothers with a world championship ring in different sports, he thought that was the hook. And then that never even got in the piece. That was kind of the genesis for the whole thing. But I thought they did a great job. And they're really nice people. You know, our family just really enjoyed interacting with John and with Barrett Remack, the producer, and all of their technicians. That they were really, really nice people.
Yeah, I learned in the interview, Sean, that your brother Terry, very quiet, reserved, and humble. There's no doubt. When he asked the question, yeah. Why do you think we're doing, you know, how did you guys get these jobs? Because we're damn good. That's why.
Yeah. I don't know if he said damn, but he definitely said we're good. And Terry, I was glad, you know, the HBO audience got a real sense of Terry. You know, the three of us are all quite different. You know, Ryan is kind of the most quiet and reserved, and that came through, I think, in the piece. And we're all emotional. I mean, we kind of joked with each other about who would cry the most. And I think I cried the most, but I'm not sure that made it on the air, but I did ask the producer when they interviewed us all individually, did I cry more than the other two? It was very emotional talking about them and talking about our dad. And, you know, I know how proud he is and would be of Terry and Ryan and what they've accomplished. And, you know, I sure as heck am too.
Now that you're in your second year in the booth with John Gruden, calling Monday Night Football games, you're here in our city, Titans and Colts tonight. How long, and you've done so many, you know, sports, and I'm not going to ask you, what's your favorite sport? Because I know the answer. It's like asking, what's your favorite kid? I get it. So I'm not going to ask that question. But how long did it take to, you know, it's about chemistry in the booth and to mesh. And was it an easy transition for you guys to form the relationship and to kind of see the product that we get today?
You know, in all honesty, I don't think it was easy. I thought it really took till toward the end of last season where I started to feel comfortable. You know, I was really the only new person. I mean, we had a couple of new people in the truck in various positions, but, you know, most of this Monday Night Football production and technical crew has been together for a long time. So, you know, I was accustomed to working with the same people in college football and college basketball and had their way of doing things, our way of doing things. And then, you know, this was significantly different in many ways. And John, as you guys know, is a unique character. It took some time to get used to, you know, his tempo and what he likes and what he doesn't like and how he wants to prepare and, you know, what he wants to get into on the air, what he doesn't want to get into. So, you know, I thought we kind of found a nice rhythm toward the end of last year, and I think this year has been infinitely better. You know, people said some things about chemistry last year, and I was like, you know, we've done five games together. It'd be nice to have a little bit of time to establish a little understanding of how it's going to work. But I think we have, and, you know, I think this year's been really comfortable, and I think the listeners, viewers have probably seen that as well.
Sean McDonough on the line with us. Before I flip this to Willie, Sean, Derek Mason is a part of our show every day. He's out today. I would have left this question for him because you were on the mic for the Michigan State crazy finish a couple of years ago. And I would have left that question for him. How nuts was calling that ending to that game with the box punt?
Oh, it was crazy. You know, I mean, you can sit there and anticipate a lot of things. You know, I think most of the time you're calling games, you're trying to be aware of all the possible things that might happen. But, you know, that was a very hard thing to see coming. And, you know, it was one of the wildest, most dramatic endings of a big college football game ever, you know, and I think my call just reflected the astonishment. I didn't mean to scream like a 12-year-old, but that's just sort of what came out. You know, in this job, you have to do it live, and you don't get a chance to do it over again, and hopefully your call reflects the moment and the significance of it, in that case, the craziness of it. So I was a little embarrassed at the time that I squeaked and squealed, but, you know, as they replay it the last couple of years, you know, I think it matched the moment, so I'm fine with it.
Sean McDonough is with us in town to call the Monday Night Football game tonight, Titans at Colts over at Nissan Stadium. Sean, I guess we're getting nostalgic here, but I want to ask you one, again, long-ranging question about your career. My father-in-law was the baseball coach at Dartmouth in the mid-'80s when you were doing the weekly Ivy League game of the week back then when you were right out of college. So he can go way back. He noticed you very early. And, of course, I've married into a total Red Sox family, so they have watched a lot of you. But you're a guy that you've been around for a long time, and you jumped in. You did the World Series when you were very young in the early 1990s, and you've sort of stayed consistent to doing a lot of different things. Your background and where you learned how to do play-by-play, the versatility that you've shown, I think, is very interesting, and you've been able to go wherever the opportunity has taken you. So where were the roots? Where did you learn how to do play-by-play and how to maybe do it in a lot of different sports?
Well, you know, I appreciate the question because, you know, I enjoy the versatility. I probably enjoy doing football more than anything else. You know, I know we kind of touched on that a little bit ago, but what I always really wanted to do when I got into this was do all the sports. I grew up wanting to do this because I loved sports. You know, when it was baseball season, I was totally immersed in that, and basketball, hockey, football, whatever it was. So I didn't start out necessarily with my goal to be involved in any particular sport. You know, being around my dad, who was a longtime sports writer for the Boston Globe, you know, we went to spring training for the Red Sox when I was a kid, I mean, a very young kid. And he couldn't take me into the press box, but the Red Sox radio announcers could say who could sit in their booth and who couldn't. So my dad was able to stash me, really. I was the only one old enough to go to the park, and I was probably 5 or 6 years old at the time. But I remember watching them thinking, wow, what they do is kind of cool and looks like a lot of fun. So I got a tape recorder, and literally 6 or 7 years old, they told this story on the HBO thing, you know, sat in front of the TV and just announced everything I could possibly watch as a sporting event off the TV, and knew from that age that this is what I wanted to do. Went to Syracuse to learn more on how to do it, and because they had a great reputation producing sports broadcasters, and, you know, you kind of develop your own style as you go. We'll listen to the tapes, watch the tapes, try to figure out what's good and what's not, and, you know, respond accordingly. But I've been blessed. I've been blessed every day of my life. But, you know, to have this as my occupation for all these years, you know, knowing since I was 5 or 6 years old, it's what I always wanted to do, I feel enormously blessed.
How hard in this league is it to try to predict one week to the next? It's so tough when just when you think one team's on a roll and they're going to get it all figured out and take control of their division, you see something like what you saw last night with the 0-5 Giants winning, and there's so many games you can circle that remind you of that. The Dolphins, who looked awful in beating the Titans last week, they go ahead and win in Atlanta, coming down 17 points, coming back and winning. You just can't figure this league out, can you?
No, you can't, you know, and I guess it's always had some unpredictability, but it seems to be more this year than I can ever remember. I mean, we were joking last week about, you know, the Patriots and the Jets had the same record. Before the season started, a lot of people were saying, you know, the Patriots might not lose a game and the Jets might not win a game and they're probably tanking. So that they went into that game yesterday, both 3-2, is amazing as well. So,
really good stuff from Sean McDonough, who was in the booth with John Gruden here from Monday Night Football and the Titans' victory over the Colts. It'll be the Predators and the Avalanche tonight. We'll have lots to get into tomorrow as we'll be at the Downtown Omni around SEC Basketball Media Days. Lots to discuss tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day and a good night. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, Derek loves you.